The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm Claire.
And I'm Erica. We're the hosts of A Thing or Two. We are professional enthusiasts constantly on the hunt for the products, books, and trends that should be on your radar. And we share them with you every Monday, whether it's marinated olive oil that we're putting on everything, a deep dive on pillows, or the fact that suddenly gas stoves are on everyone's out list for 2023.
We challenge the friends we invite on the show to bring their own favorite thingies too. Like when Ellen Van Dusen spilled about the IG account that's keeping her current with the youths.
We also love a gift guide. We take listener questions, Dear Abby style, and tell you what to get your vegan minimalist coworker or your sister-in-law who loves to hunt.
So be sure to listen and follow A Thing or Two with Claire and Erica wherever you listen to podcasts. Come on in, take a seat.
I'm so excited, Sarah, to have you because, well, we were connected through a friend.
Yes.
Who I love. I'll give her an anonymous shout out. You're the greatest. She'll listen to this and she'll know who she is. But when she connected us, we were like early postpartum, both of us,
yeah,
right?
I think I was 3 or 4 months postpartum.
Right, because I remember you were like, I'll send you the book. So Sarah wrote a book, Drinking Games. And I was like, you know what? I listen to these types of books on audiobook. Like I only read romance novels. Everything else I listen to. So I downloaded it. And this was the first time I've really done this where I would listen to it in bed, just like in between my night feeds or during my night feeds or like trying to fall asleep. So it was this like very specific time period of my life that I remember having your voice in my ear.
I love that.
And I loved this book.
Thank you.
Loved. I know I texted you, but I really am just blown away by anyone who's able to write a book. It like really mind boggles me. But B, I think it's a story that so many people, specifically women our age in their early 30s, late 20s, can relate to because it really talks about almost like how our country, yes, but specifically the cities of like New York and LA romanticize alcohol.
Yeah.
And how it's so easy to just not coast or float, but maybe hide something deeper in this feeling of like, well, everyone else is doing it. It's what I'm seeing
and
on the
it's
movies.
Fun.
It's fun. I'm just like everyone else. So I really want to talk about this because it's something that I resonate to in parts.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of my listeners may resonate to. And I think the topic of sobriety is one that's finally starting to come to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And like, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. So before we kick things off, I always like to acknowledge I'm actually not sober. I don't use that terminology.
Right. You're alcohol free.
I'm alcohol
free.
Don't
drink. Yeah.
I love cannabis.
Yeah.
Like psilocybin mushrooms. People will call me California sober. I don't label myself.
Yeah.
Who I may drink one day, I may not. There's no black, like it's not black and white for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't identify with the word sober, but you do, correct?
I do. Okay. Yeah. And we drank differently. So that'll be really interesting to talk about.
Yes.
Because I've heard you talk about your decision to stop drinking and what it was like for you. And I do think that it'll be really interesting to talk about the differences and like
Agreed.
How we came to the decision and what our drinking looked like.
Yes. Because I know you mentioned like I never drank to blackout.
Yeah.
And or
I
get
like
drunk.
Exclusively drank to blackout.
Which I have a lot of friends that I watch that happen as well.
Yeah.
So to kick things off, I want to go back in time. Like, how did your relationship with alcohol start? What was that like either first drink or what did you think of alcohol growing up?
So I always say like what's interesting about how excessively I ended up drinking is that alcohol wasn't like taboo really or foreign or like forbidden for me growing up. My dad is French. He grew up in Paris. So like they start drinking there like at 13 or whatever. Like he was having like a beer with like, it's called like a panache with like Sprite mixed in as like
Wait,
an
I
after
just
school
actually
snack.
Heard about this. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
But yes.
Like when he was like 13. Like, so it's wild. It's crazy. So there was no like crazy restriction. It wasn't super forbidden. So I would grow up having like sips. I could have like a sip of champagne or a sip of this here and there, whatever. But I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up like New York, New Jersey area. I was born in the city and then we were in the suburbs. And it was like peak kind of like work hard, play hard culture, I think, right? For like our society. And it,
how old are you? Do you mind me asking?
I'm 34.
Okay. So we're very close in age.
Yeah. So like, I feel like it all kind of, I look back on it now, like I remember every year there was a different like article about how this was the most competitive year ever to get into college or like it was so intense growing up in like the suburbs around New York or in the city. It feels like it really came to a head with like the girl boss movement.
Yes.
And now we're all on the other side of it and we're like in our softer eras and like people maybe aren't drinking the same way. But for me, it was like, I just needed an outlet. Like I was wound so tight and I was such a perfectionist and really like derived so much self-worth from being good at things, being good at school. I did theater. Like I was the lead in the school plays like that. I needed to, that was like how I derived my sense of self-worth was like external validation. And I got to a point where I just felt so like overwhelmed and exhausted. And I remember like getting drunk for the first time at 15 or 16, like with a friend. And it was like this like exhale. It was like, oh my God, I can relax. I can breathe. Like, and I had a lot of like food and body image issues. And I felt really just like uncomfortable in my own skin always. I always felt like I was different. Like I missed the day in school where everyone like figured out how to like do their hair, or, like wear the right clothes.
I say
like,
this all the time. I miss the lesson in womanhood of like how to do those things.
Yeah. Like everyone now is like, I watch these TikTok videos on like doing your hair and doing your makeup. Like, and I'm like, wait, how did you guys learn how to do this?
For people like, listening, they know I'm on this like learning how to curl my hair journey.
I saw this.
Like I don't understand how to do this. Okay. Yes.
My friends still do my hair like when we go to weddings and stuff, like my college friends. But like I didn't know how to do any of those things. And drinking felt like, oh, this is something that everyone does. This is cool. Like it or not, it was cool. Right. Even though we learned it was like, don't drink and drive and don't drink before the legal drinking. Like it was cool. So I fit in this moment. I'm cool. I am a part of. And, you know, I graduated from high school. I went to college. So I was like doing the right things. And I went to Brown. It was like very intense academically, but like really fun. I loved my college years. And I feel like I was surrounded by people who were so smart and so confident and sure of themselves. At least I thought. Now I talk to my friends and they're like, we didn't know. Like we were just as lost as you. But like, it was just another moment for me where I felt like I'm like an imposter here. Like I'm somehow like they made a mistake letting me in. And drinking was just like a way that I felt like a part of. I felt good enough. It was like this great equalizer where even if I didn't feel like as smart in the classroom or like as savvy, like, you know, in terms of like what I was wearing or talking about or doing, I could drink. Like I was fun, or at least I thought I was fun. I actually don't know how fun I was because I was often like the very drunk one that needed to be kind of like taken care of.
Yeah.
But I thought I was really fun. And that, yeah, it was just that. It was like partying with my friends and then moving to the city after college. And like, that's like a whole separate, we can talk about that after, but that's how it started.
So you said this, but the urge or the want to drink, to blackout, like when you were going into these nights, I'm actually just personally curious because I haven't ever felt that mentality, but I do know it is common and I've witnessed it with friends. When you're going into a night, is it like, what's happening in your brain?
Yeah.
That's leading you to continue to drink, to take shots, knowing that that's the end goal.
Okay. So blackouts are weird. I blacked out the very first time that I drank and I didn't intend to. Like I didn't know what that was. I didn't know that that could happen. And like for anyone listening who hasn't blacked out, you're not passed out. You're wide awake, having conversations. You might know, people might not even know that you're that drunk. You seem normal or you seem drunk, whatever, but like you're not forming short-term memories.
Yep.
Because your brain is like so flooded with alcohol. So that happened to me the first time I drank. I later learned that, and I think I write about this in my book, if you black out at a young age, it becomes your brain's default setting in a way where like that is kind of how you process alcohol. Not every single time, but you're more prone to blackouts if you black out at a very young age. Anyway, but I guess going into a night, it was always this idea of like, I want more. Like the second I would start to drink, it would feel really good. So you have that first sip and you're like, whew, like that's really nice. I don't have the part of my brain that's like, I'm good. Like I feel good now. I'm done. My brain is like, we need more. This feels so good. I want more. I want to feel even better. If this feels so good, I'm going to feel amazing after I have like five glasses of wine. And it was this weird thing where I didn't like want to. to black out every single time. Some nights, rarely, I would be like, let's just have a crazy night and I don't care what happens. And like,
yeah. Okay.
But then like, it was a little scary, you know, like, there were consequences that I didn't love. I didn't love waking up with a raging hangover. Mm-hmm. I didn't love waking up and being like, I'm so embarrassed that I texted this person. I didn't love that my friends were like, you threw up or you did this. Like, I didn't always want that to happen. Mm-hmm. So there were nights where I would be like, okay, I'm going to take 4 shots at the pregame and like, I'm going to stop, which is still a lot. But like, I would, you know, I would just be like, I'm going to switch to water at a certain point in the night. I can't do that. And it took me years to accept that like, I physically can't do that. Like, call it an allergy, call it like being prone to addiction or having addictive mm-hmm. tendencies. Like, anyone listening who like has had that experience, like, will know what I mean when I say that, like, my sober brain would tell me, we are not going to do that tonight. We're only going to have 4 drinks. And then once the first drink kicked in, mm-hmm. it was like, I hadn't even had that thought.
Right. Spring cleaning is one of my favorite things. On our walk this morning, I turned to Joe and I was like, it feels like spring. And you know what that means? It's time to spring clean. With that, I love, love doing a closet purge. Alongside purging products, I am really only trying to buy staple items for my wardrobe, okay? Like, I want to simplify my wardrobe so that I just have pieces that I love, I can grab, I can mix and match and make, like, not exactly a capsule wardrobe, but a little bit of an extended version of one. And Quince is my go-to for luxury essentials at affordable prices. Quince offers a range of high-quality items at prices within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters from $50, washable silk tops and dresses, organic cotton sweaters, and 14-karat gold jewelry. They have this 100% washable silk maxi skirt for under $80 that is so freaking beautiful, versatile, and easy to dress up or down. Quince creates timeless classics that never go out of style, items that you'll have in your closet forever, which makes putting together an outfit so much easier. And especially if you're trying to put a capsule wardrobe together, they have all of your must-haves. The best part is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with the top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. So, I mean, talk about a huge freaking win. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/Cameron for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Cameron to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Cameron. I'm curious hearing you say this because I can resonate, not necessarily with alcohol, but I do feel I have addictive tendencies, mm-hmm. as does my mom. And I mean, I think I've said this on here. Like, the reason I never did Coke was because my mom turned to me and was like, you will love this. Mm-hmm. It's everything you want.
Yeah.
And you will become addicted to it. So don't try it. And I was like, noted, I'll never try it.
I love that you listened to her.
I also like am really weird about things going up my nose. That kind of freaks me out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I say I didn't do Coke, but like there were nights in college where I'd take Adderall, which is pretty much the same freaking thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not on this like high horse, but I recognize that in myself. And I think my addictive personality really showed post-college with more body stuff where I became obsessed with, in an orthorexic way.
Yes.
What was going into my body, how I was working out, the addiction of like that high.
Yeah.
Do you feel... And I know I'm jumping ahead. I want to go back to this journey of yours. But after getting sober, do you feel like you've had to work on the addictive tendencies with other things? Because I see that with some of my other friends.
Oh, my God. Yes. Like, I can pick up anything and, like, make it an addiction. Make it my, it's all about escape, right? It's all about, like, that fantasy.
I feel about my romance novels. I'm not lying.
No, literally. I don't know if you watched One Day on Netflix, but.
Oh, my God. It broke me.
I'm still not okay. And our mutual friend walked me through it because I spoke to her about it also, and she was not okay. But, like, I became addicted. Like, I went into it being, like.
No, I become addicted.
Addicted. Like, I went into it being, like, oh, I have 14 episodes. I'm going to really take my time with it. Like, I'm going to watch it after the baby goes down. By, like, episode 11, I was binging. I had headphones on while I was with the baby. I was like, shh, mommy needs her special time.
This is how I am. It's
not
good.
I needed it, right? And then when it's over, I'm like, I crashed. I mean, I was not okay. But yeah, I can do it with anything. That's like my most recent example. But
mine was Vampire Diaries during my pregnancy. It was like all I could, like literally, it so consumed me. It was all I could think about in like an embarrassing way.
Yes.
Where my husband had to be like, you do realize that you're obsessed with these high school vampires.
They're not your real friends.
You have a life.
Right.
You have a child, you have friends.
Right.
Like, what is happening? But I get so all consumed.
Same. And with One Day, I was then like re-watching it after. Mm. And my husband's like, what are you doing? Like, this is bizarre. Like, I'm binging it on my phone. He's like, you're not in that world. I'm like, well, you're not British. And like, I hate you now. Like, I want to be in that world. So it's like, I don't know what it is. I can do it with anything. I mean, I did it with exercise. I did it with, I think a lot of us had that like phase maybe in like the mid 2000s, like 2010s of like, I'm going to be plant-based now. I'm going to do juice cleanses. I'm going to do whatever. And I think there's versions of it that are like, can be okay. Like, especially now being a new mom, like, cause I talked to my therapist about one day and I was like, this show really consumed me. Like, am I okay? She was like, it was something that was just for you. Like it was your time. It was an escape. And that's okay sometimes. Cause like you're taking care of a baby all day. It's like very, very intense. It's okay to have like an out, right? Yeah. A little bit of like just time and space for you. But I think it's hard. I have to really check myself of like, am I numbing out on TikTok for 20 minutes because like it's okay and I can do that? Or am I like numbing out in a way where I need to kind of look at it?
Right. And I feel that same way where it's like, do I just need my brain to shut off for a second because it's been on overdrive?
And I'm so overstimulated.
The entire day.
Yeah.
Or am I looking to scratch some itch that I can't find?
Exactly.
And for me, I think journaling has really helped in that, where if I'm like able to just dump my emotions there before I pick up whatever this quote unquote fix is, it stops me for the most part from diving into that fix as that like middle ground.
Yeah.
Back to your drinking days.
Yeah.
So you graduate from college, you move to Manhattan.
Yeah.
Eventually you're working. And it's what I said in the beginning of this like romanticization, whatever the word is.
Yeah.
Of drinking culture, where we grew up watching, it was Sex and the City era. It was like, I want to order a dirty martini and feel great about myself because I'm a businesswoman and I'm a bad bitch who can drink and get up at the ass crack of dawn. Like, I worked in sales and trading, so it was very heavy drinking culture. And it was like, if you can't hoot with the, if you can't, what is it? If you can't get up with the birds, if you can't, whatever. Something like, if you can't get up and get your ass to the office by 6:30, then you shouldn't be partying. And if you can't do those two, then like this isn't the industry for you, is pretty much the underlying message.
Yeah.
And I can't do that.
Right.
So I'm curious like what your relationship was when you moved here, because now you're working, you have more responsibilities than just going to class like a few times a day. What did that look like with your drinking? Because I also think that the city is so revolved around alcohol that it feels like if you're not doing it, then you're not quote unquote in.
Moving to New York after college, like turned the volume up on everything. Right. Everything, all the bars closed at like 2 o'clock in the morning in Providence. So like whatever was going on, like it was, I was done. Like it was bedtime. I had to leave. Nothing closes in New York.
No, it's bad.
It was crazy. Like I had just broken up with my boyfriend. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm working to work in marketing. I felt really lost, and drinking and going out and partying, like I just felt like I was like a part of, like, you know, it was, it made sense. Like that was where I felt like, okay, there's a reason that I'm here. You know, it's to kind of be in the mix and to be like making friends and taking pictures and posting them. And I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And honestly, I didn't show up as the best version of myself in like my first jobs. Like I quit jobs often and early on. I was like, I don't like this. I don't know what I want to do. And there's like, I'm aware, a degree of privilege and the ability to do that and to be like, maybe I want to go to graduate school. Maybe I want to do, maybe I want to do something totally different. I was constantly like seeking and trying to find the thing that would make me feel like I was okay. And eventually, like at like 26, I did settle into a job that like I really loved and, you know, felt like, okay, this is maybe my answer. Like this is, this is the piece of me that I've been like searching for. But similar to what you're describing, like it was a very work hard, play hard culture of like, okay, well, we're all going to go to happy hour. And this is the time where like I'm building now professional relationships also. And it was a slippery slope. Like there were nights where I would be like, okay, we're all drinking the same way and I'm fun and I'm like having cool conversations with people. And then the next morning I'd be like, wait, what did we talk about? Like, how did that night end? And like, yeah, showing up to work hungover, just feeling like horrible. And but also the, like a degree of, I don't know, pride in it. Like, cause everyone was kind of like, oh, like Thursday.
You were cool if you were doing cool. it.
Yeah. yeah. And it was just, I felt like I was on a hamster wheel. And I think there was also a culture of like this hustle culture in New York Absolutely. At the time, right? And in a lot of big cities where, yeah, you went out, you got really drunk, you signed up for SoulCycle at 5:30, 6:30, whatever in the mm-hmm. morning. Like you go, you sweat it out, like cortisol pumping, you like wait in line for the shower. And then like—
No, it's such a specific time of life.
Right? And it, then like, you have your bag of like yep. sweaty clothes on the subway and like you go to your desk and it's at your feet all day. And like—
You're still post-shower sweat. It's so hot. Like, yeah. Yes.
But you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I know from reading the book that there were a few stints in the hospital yeah. after rough nights, but surprisingly, those weren't like the last straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
What was it for you that was like the wake up call that you realized I can't do this like other people can and maybe I have to stop? And were there multiples?
There were multiples. Like the first time I woke up in the hospital, I was probably 23 or 24. So weird, like mom brain, I like can't remember.
Fair.
But I was very young and I remember thinking like something needs to change. Like this is not working. And I would like convince myself that just taking breaks from drinking mm-hmm. was the answer. So I at that time like took a couple weeks or took a month. And so by the time I turned 28, I had like had these multiple stints of whatever, moderating or abstaining, but like nothing had changed in those times. Like I wasn't looking at the way I drank. I was just simply not drinking mm-hmm. and then thinking, okay, now it's a reset. I'll go back and like it'll be different. And it would be for like a couple of weeks. And then inevitably I would have like a bad night and then it would sort of be the same. And this time, like almost now, it's 6.5, almost 7 years ago, I woke up in someone's apartment. I didn't remember like how I had gotten there or what had happened. And I just turned 28 a few days earlier. And there was something about that age that like, I just felt like it wasn't cute anymore or funny anymore. Mm. And it was easy enough when I was like 24, 25, 26 to be like, everyone's kind of crazy and everyone's lost and everyone's making these mistakes. But I had like just moved into my own studio. I wanted to like keep it really nice. I always tell this story, like I got in a white bedspread and I was like, I am an adult. Like I have a white bedspread. I will not like puke in the bed, like, mm-hmm. you know, and I did like a few days into, like it was just the same thing. And so I remember waking up in this person's apartment and like walking home, I lived in Williamsburg, like walking like through my neighborhood and just feeling so horrible. Like I felt so ashamed. I felt so sick, like physically, like my head was pounding. I had signed up for a workout that morning. Like I missed it. I had to like pay the fee. Like what? It was just like dumb, but I was like, this is like embarrassing. There was still a part of me that like had goals, even though I had mm-hmm. not really been listening to that voice for a long time and had just been like, this is fun, whatever, like everyone's doing it. But I had this moment where I was like, I want a real relationship. And like, I was having tons of first dates, but like wasn't able to sustain any kind of real deep connection because it's hard to do that with someone who's like drunk.
Yep.
And even though I really liked my job and I felt like I was like doing well professionally, I wanted to write. I knew that I always wanted to write and I wasn't doing that. And I would tell myself, oh, I can write on the weekends, or I can write, like I'll wake up early and write before work. That's not happening when you're hungover going out. Mm-hmm. So there were just, it was just like a moment, a really like tiny glimmer of like willingness and desperation, I think, to just like make a change and do something different. And I didn't think in terms of like, I'm never going to drink again, but I also felt like I had done enough like investigative work in my 20s of like trying to stop and then starting again and then the same thing happening, that I was sort of like resigned to the fact yep. that like it just wasn't working, you know? And I think it was a really hard decision and there were lots of like hard moments. Like it was hard for me to not drink at like my first wedding or like mm-hmm. my first like bachelorette trips. Like there were moments where like it was challenging for me, but it was a fairly easy decision because I just felt done. Like I just yeah. felt done. It wasn't my worst night. It wasn't the craziest night. I was just like, how much longer are you going to keep doing this?
I've been posting our smoothie walks on social media because it is my favorite way to start the day. Now that it's nice out, we get up, we strap both the kids in the stroller, grab our smoothies, and we hit the road with our dog. And it is like the best 30 minutes to start our day. And the reason we do smoothie walks is because A, it's just like simply easier to walk and eat breakfast in that form. But B, I've been on such a smoothie kick lately. And something that I am loving when it comes to our smoothie walks in terms of actually taking the smoothie on the go, but also making our smoothie, is the Beast Mini Blender. It's an ultra powerful compact blender that can do so many different jobs in the kitchen, and it's designed to be displayed on your countertop. It's actually gorgeous and like beautiful along the landscape of our countertops. It is so easy to use. And once you blend everything up, you just attach the straw cap and the drinking lid directly to your blender cup and take your blends on the go. Obviously, you can make smoothies like I do. I add spinach, banana, peanut butter, chia seeds, a protein powder, some water, and then maybe some strawberries if I'm in the mood. And we call it a banana split smoothie, and our toddler is obsessed with it. But also you can make dips, dressings, sorbets, pasta sauces, mocktails, chop and mince vegetables, or ground coffee. You can do everything in this thing. And at just $99, Beast did an amazing job at marketing an affordable luxury appliance that doesn't compromise on quality. Visit thebeast.com and use code Cameron at checkout for 15% off your purchase. That's thebeast.com. Use code Cameron for 15% off.
Two things I am constantly prioritizing and encouraging everyone else to as well are my mental health and physical health. For me, this starts with my morning routine. I am prioritizing my mental health by having some very necessary alone and quiet time before taking on my day, and simultaneously prioritizing my physical health while including nutritional supplements like AG1. If you're a longtime listener, you know that I've been drinking AG1 for over 5 years now. When I started drinking AG1 daily, I noticed I had increased energy first thing in the morning and that it helped with my digestion throughout the day. As a creature of habit, it is absolutely my preferred method to start my day. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Because I am recommending AG1 to anyone with ears, I love seeing my friends and family also get hooked and join the daily AG1 train. I obviously am a huge fan of the company, but my husband is truly their number one supporter. Without fail, he is making his glass of AG1 every single morning, first thing when he comes downstairs before starting his workout. He feels it helps him feel more energetic in the morning and that he's getting the nutrients his body craves first thing, which is a true win-win. AG1 is a supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/FFF. That's drinkag1.com/FFF to check it out.
I'm curious with specifically this period, like post-college, the multiple hospital trips, mm-hmm. the blackouts, all of that. From a friend perspective, mm-hmm. like what did your relationships look like? You mentioned romantically that you really were going on a lot of first dates, but then not really making relationships from there. What about with your friendships? Because I know there's the one friend who kind of broke up with you
yeah.
during this journey. And mm-hmm. I've gone through many ups and downs with friends
yeah.
rooted in alcohol and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hard on everyone involved because yeah. you don't want to be the friend that's like, I actually don't like you like this. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of moving on. Like I'm out.
Yeah.
But also it sucks to be the friend to be broken up with. Like the whole thing is hard. And yeah. I don't think we talk about friendship breakups enough.
I agree.
And I think this is a big trigger for many at this age because you may have just very different directions on how you want to handle your relationship with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So what, like how many breakups did you go through? What did that feel like? Where are you now with these people? Have there yeah. been kind of rekindlings or no?
So I still have like a core group of very close girlfriends from college. They were my friends when I was drinking. They're still my very mm-hmm. close friends now. I think I hid a lot from them. And now when I look back, I thought we were all drinking the same way, but mm-hmm. we actually weren't. Like we would go to dinner and have like a couple bottles of wine between like 7 of us. And they would go home or like they would come out for like a couple of drinks, but like switch to water or like have one drink an hour. And I was like going back and getting 3, right? So yeah. I was the drunkest of our group. They didn't really drink the way that I did. And then they would go home at like midnight or whatever. And I would sort of stay out or like had other friends. I had like party friends that I would text and be right. like, where are you guys? Those friendships, the like, where are you guys after a certain point in the night kind of faded naturally mm-hmm. when I stopped drinking, which is fine. I did have like a couple of like close friendships, one I write about in the book, that ended really because of my drinking. And at the time, I remember feeling like defensive about it and being like, this is so messed up. She drinks too. We drink together. Like, so hypocritical. Now I look back and I have so much compassion for myself at that time and for mm-hmm. her because like we were 24, 25. Like right. no one knows how to have those kinds of conversations. And to your point, like, yeah, we don't talk about friend breakups or even like taking a break from a friendship, right? So no one really had the language for that. But my friendships now with those girls that I am still close with, I think are stronger than they were when we were all drinking together.
I'm sure.
I'm present for them. I know what's going on in their lives. But what's also weird about this stage of life is like, I almost wish I could freeze time sometimes and like have gotten sober maybe earlier or just like have had more time to just be this version of myself with them. Because what ended up happening is like life continued and we live in different cities. Like some of us are married, some of us are not, some have kids, some don't. And so that's sort of like heartbreaking in a way also.
Yeah, that like you feel like you missed that window.
Yeah, we're still friends, but like I get to see them now every few months, maybe for like a dinner. It's different.
It's so different. I think about that too, actually.
It's just like, I sometimes think about that time in my life when we all lived in New York. I mean, not all of us, like a couple were in different cities, but like most of us were here. We had the ability to see each other every single weekend and like spend all this quality time together. And I was like drunk or hungover for a lot of it.
I think though, that's just aging.
I know.
In a way that you're a version of yourself that's evolved that you couldn't have been at that time. I think about it less around drinking, but more about my intensity and maybe like anger or just my emotions were very different. I wasn't as caring or like compassionate of a person. And I think about that where I wish I could go back in time and like give what I want to give to certain friendships back then and like just be a better version of myself because I have those like uncomfortable, ugly feelings around things I did when I was younger. But I not that I didn't know any better, that's not an excuse, but I did not have the emotional intelligence to know what I was doing was not who I wanted to be.
Me too.
So you mentioned, obviously, you're now sober. What did that journey look like for you once you did make that decision that morning? Like, I actually don't want to do this anymore. What was that journey to sobriety for you? For whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, I knew that I couldn't do it alone because I had tried before. I had tried to like in silence and like in secret, just like stop drinking and it never worked. I like really needed to be held accountable. And so I remember like I told my therapist and I, with help from my therapist, found like a recovery group. And for anyone listening who's curious about sobriety, like doesn't have to be the way you do it, but it really worked for me and really helped me. I needed specifically to connect with other young women who weren't drinking because I just didn't know that it was possible. Like now, what we were talking about earlier with like sobriety being so much more like commonplace and people talking about it, like I think this younger generation will be more familiar with sobriety as a concept. I had no frame of reference for like what a sober person looked like. My friends all drank. Like I didn't know anyone, literally anyone
I didn't
who didn't
either
drink
at that time. Yeah.
So this was like 2017. Like it wasn't really talked about. And I remember meeting this group of like young women who didn't drink and I was blown away. Like I thought that being sober meant that you were much older. You were like in your 60s, whatever, you had lost things in a really dramatic way. You were divorced, you had been like laid off or whatever, and you had had to hit this like really dramatic rock bottom. And instead, I remember meeting women who were like really successful professionally. Like, this sounds silly, but like engaged or married, like beautiful, you know, like cool. And these are like, I think now I can look at anyone who, from any walk of life and like identify with like the feelings and the way that they drank. But at the time I really needed to be able to like see myself and be like, okay, wait, I could not drink and still like have a partner one day and like date and be successful. Like I didn't know that was possible. And that was just like everything for me in the beginning. I really had to take it one day at a time because I was grieving this idea of the like Sex and the City relationship with alcohol that I finally had to admit like didn't work for me.
Also, you know, because it's TV.
Right.
Because but like we all thought about that, but it's not real.
And
like,
with their friendships too, like to like the friendship point, like I still sometimes think like wow, they all were in their 30s, like meeting for brunch every weekend, like best friends hanging out. Yeah. Like I don't know that people really do that.
I'm rewatching Friends now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, they're all just like at this coffee shop all day long.
All day.
And they technically work.
Yeah.
And like they have these gorgeous apartments. Right. And I just got to an episode where they all turned 30. I'm like, they're younger than me. Like,
I know.
This is so not real.
I
but
know.
Growing up, I was like, this is the goal.
This is the dream.
Yeah, the dream.
Totally. And I really needed to like grieve that idea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had to like be walked through a lot of my firsts when I stopped drinking. Like, I was so scared to date. I was so scared to like sit across the table from a man and be like, yeah, I actually don't drink. Now it's like not a big deal. And I talk about it so openly, but I was so ashamed. I just didn't have the self-confidence to be like, this doesn't work for me and I'm not doing it. I really felt like everyone would think it was so weird and would judge me for it.
What did that look like for you dating?
You know, it was like a mixed bag. I did have a few guys who were like, not interested after they found out that I didn't drink.
Which is honestly a great way to just like write people, like for you.
Yeah.
Be like, okay, so we're definitely not, there's no need for a second date.
Yeah. I had a few guys who like tried to convince me to drink that were like, maybe, yeah, like maybe you weren't doing it the right way. Maybe that's why you were so hungover. Like, have you tried just drinking tequila?
Let me mansplain alcoholism to you.
I was like, great, thank you. But, you know, I ended up meeting my now husband when I was like a year and a half sober. And I always say like, dating sober is the greatest superpower. Mm-hmm. You are so present without alcohol. You can very quickly figure out whether or not you have chemistry with someone. Yep. And it's very different to be like three drinks in and be like, yeah, we have chemistry. You have chemistry with anyone. You have three drinks in you. Like, versus being like, wait, I like how I feel with this person. Like, he's listening to me. He's kind. He's asking me questions. Like, mm-hmm. I feel comfortable with him. Like, I just was really, and before, like I had gone on other dates where I didn't feel that. And I was like, oh, there's actually nothing wrong on paper with this person. I just don't feel it. I had never made that decision before. I always was just like, I think this is going well. Like he texted me the next day, you know, and I suddenly was like in the driver's seat in my own life and in my own relationships. And I think, you know, with my husband, like I faked it a little bit in the beginning. I faked being really confident about it. And it was really attractive to him. You know, I had this thing that was just my own. I had made this big life change. I was really like working to become this better version of myself. And that was important to him too. And now that's like something that we both continue to do in our marriage is like try to be better versions of ourselves together. And so I think it was for the life stage that we were both at, a very attractive quality to him. I think it would have been really hard to be 22 or like in college. Yeah. But where we were, I think it was like, it was cool to him.
For people who are listening who are either in a place that you were in, or for people who are listening who have friends that they can tell are in this type of place, like what advice would you give to them to either sit down and have that conversation with themselves and like really acknowledge where they're at and what can happen, or sit a friend down and be like, I'm actually like, are there words that someone could have potentially said to you? Oh. Or do you think it's like, you kind of have to figure it out, not figure it out on your own, but nothing really would have gotten you there.
Nothing would have gotten me there. Okay. No one could have gotten through to me until I was done and I was ready.
Yeah.
I couldn't hear anyone. So I would say, like, if you have a friend who you think is really struggling with alcohol, like, you need to make a decision about whether or not, like, this is a friend that you want to stick by. If you don't, okay, like, fade it out. Like, maybe just make plans during the day. Maybe don't go out drinking with them. Maybe you get, this is your coffee friend now. This is your workout friend now. Like, you go on a walk, whatever, and you don't want to be a part of that. Yeah. Or you just don't want to continue the friendship, and, like, that's fine, too. If this is someone who's, like, genuinely so important to you and you want to stay close, I think you just kind of have to like ride it out and be there for them. Like, and I think it's a fine line between like enabling and just sort of being there. But I think, you know, for me, like my friends were just like solid. They were just there. I knew that they were there. I knew I could count on them. And then when I kind of like woke up and made this decision, they were like, we're really happy that you like, we were really worried, you know?
But can I say from the friend's perspective?
Yeah.
Just from my experience, like it is really hard. I'm not saying you were necessarily this person because I wasn't in your friend group.
Yeah.
But when you're going out and you know the night's going to end having to take care of someone.
I know.
Or it gets to a point where it's like, it's not fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, I actually don't want to do this. Totally. No matter, like, I love you with my entire heart.
Yeah.
But we can't keep doing this.
I think you stop going out with them.
Yeah.
Because I did have I had the friend who was like, I cannot be your friend anymore, period. Mm-hmm. But I did have a friend, I remember, who was like, you drink like you're afraid that they're going to run out of alcohol. Like, you can slow down. And I remembered that comment. Like, and I remembered being like, I do that. Like, that is weird. Why do I do that? But like, I didn't look at her and say like, oh my God, thank you so much for telling me that. Like, I'm going to stop now. I couldn't. And I think if she had been even like slightly like you should stop. Because here's the thing. If you're the friend who's saying that and you still drink, it's just so hard to take it seriously, especially when you're young and you're all going out the same. Like,
yeah.
And if you have an addictive personality and it is hard for you to stop, then like you're really not in control once you take that first drink.
Right.
And so even if you have the best intentions and your friend is like so loving and gentle and says the perfect thing, and then you guys go out and drink together, your friend just might not be able to stop or control it once she starts and or once they start. And so I would say either don't go out with them and like do other things with them and make sure they know that you're there for them and like you're happy to talk about the night before and what happened and like be a safe place, or like, yeah, take some space from the friendship.
Yeah.
You know, but I really don't think there's anything that anyone could have said. And I say that because if you are like a spouse of someone who's drinking this way, or a parent, or a very dear friend, like I think that you can really take that on and be like, I need to fix this. I will hide the alcohol. I will give them rules. I will give them an ultimatum. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Like, I could not have gotten and stayed sober if I didn't really want to. And I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make, is like trying to control and change, and like they can't.
Or just take it on themselves in this emotional sense of like, I'm failing this person because I can't get through to them.
It's so not anything that anyone can say. It's not, I don't even know how to put it into words. Like, it's such an inside job.
It has to come from within.
It has to come from within. It's like if someone said to you, like, you really need to, like, lose weight or exercise. Like, you're the only one who can get up and go to the gym. You're the only one who can, like, not put the food in your mouth. Like, no one can do that for you. It's just like, or like starting to meditate or any habit, like you have to want to do it or you're simply not going to.
Agreed. You just had a baby.
Yeah.
So postpartum and pregnancy in general, but especially postpartum, can bring up a lot.
Yeah.
I know for myself and just based on conversations we've had.
Yes.
How has that journey been in tandem with your sobriety?
Yeah. This is the first podcast I've done since having my son.
Welcome.
So this is the first really like time that I've been asked this question, and it's a really good one. And I'm also like just so in awe that you have two now, because it's so hard. I have never done less for my recovery than I have these last 6 months.
Does that scare you?
A little bit, but I've also never been more grateful and sure of my decision to be sober. I have never once considered drinking because I am so present for my child, and I cannot imagine parenting with a hangover. And
it's
literally
hell on earth.
I used to always say that. I used to always be like, I'm really glad that I'm, you know, going to be a sober parent. Like the idea of having a crying baby with a headache, that sounds horrible. Until I had a crying baby, I did not understand just how horrible it would have been. And like, this child was not sleeping.
Like, it's literally the worst thing you can imagine.
I cannot imagine. Like, I know that I would be like, oh, made it to the end of the day, want to have a glass of wine, even if I only had one or two and I just fell asleep because I'm so tired. Then the baby's crying in an hour or two and I'm waking up like dry mouth and thirsty and head hurting. And like, I'm going, like, I would do it because I wouldn't have a choice, but I know I would be like snippy,
irritable, resentful, angry. Which is why I stopped drinking.
Right.
All of these reasons.
Right. And instead I get to show up with just like pure love and patience. And also like a big thing in recovery is the idea of like not only thinking about yourself, because that's like a big part of just like drinking. It's like you're very selfish, you're very self-centered. And like the antidote to that is like acts of service.
Yep.
So that's something that I really worked on and practiced in sobriety. I've never been more of service in my life. Like, I am of service to this child. And so when I say I've never done less for my recovery, like, yeah, I don't have the time. I'm not meditating every single morning. I'm new to, I'm sure I will eventually be able to start doing that again, but like, I'm new here. Like, I'm a new mom. So like,
please.
Right. Like, I'm not, I'm not like sitting on my mat, like, you know, and like doing whatever I'm doing.
I am not either.
Like, but I am of service all day, every day. And I would not be able to do that if I was drinking. So I am, it just looks different, you know, but like there's like a recovery expression that's like, you know, getting sober is a bridge back to life. Like, I didn't get sober to like be on the bridge, right? The bridge being like only thinking about my sobriety every day. Like, it is the most important thing in my life. It has to be. Otherwise, like, I lose all these other things. Like, I can't show up for them. Yep. But also, like, I'm in the life part of it now. And that looks like sometimes like choosing my marriage or like things I need to do around the house or whatever over just thinking about myself and like my perfect version of like what recovery is.
What is your recovery toolkit that you rely on? You say meditation, but what are some tangible things that you're doing that are helping you? Obviously, before you are in postpartum, like what were you doing? And now what are you trying to still do?
So something I've done almost every single day since getting sober is write a gratitude list. Mm-hmm. It can be like one or two or 10 things. I think there's something about like rewiring your brain to focus on gratitude that is just such a game changer. So that's like one of my favorite tools. Journaling is a huge one for me. I've always loved to journal, just like dumping my thoughts on the page. Yeah. Meditation was a really big one. Movement is a really big one for me too. And like, honestly, like now it's a lot of like habit stacking. It's like I'm putting the baby in the stroller so that he naps. I'm going on a walk so that like I get sunlight and I'm moving. I'm listening to a podcast, you know, or like a recovery related something and doing that. And then connection, I think, is like the biggest one. Like when I'm isolated, I am the worst version of myself. Like I'm in my head. All those old thoughts of like, when did everyone learn how to do that comes up. And mm-hmm. it's like everyone's hanging out without me and I'm not a part of. And so being like in the middle and feel, and that's very hard as a new mom. Like I am quite isolated right now. And so that's something I'm like actively working on is like making new mom friends and finding community, but like being a part of, you know, really like surrounding myself with people who I feel good around is huge for me. And I think like for anyone who's listening, who's newly sober or thinking about getting sober, like paying attention to the types of people that you're spending time with and like how you feel when you leave those dinners whatever. Yes. Like, what is it? Like you're the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with.
Yes.
Something like that. Right. So spending time with people who make me feel good is like a really big one for me too.
That's huge for me because I will leave places and I'm like, I feel like not great. Like, what was that conversation even about?
Right.
What's happening that was really negative? And there's such a difference between that and then leaving a place with people who light you up and really fill your cup. And you're like, I can do anything.
Anything. You're like vibrating energetically.
Yes. I want to ask some listener questions. So I'm just going to pull them up because I posted on my story for people to submit some. I think this is a big topic for my community because I talk about just not drinking, but I think sobriety is another whole realm. Mm-hmm. So based on just the fact that we did just talk about moms and becoming a mom, do you have thoughts on like mommy wine culture? And like, what are your feelings towards that?
I totally get it. Like, mm-hmm. it makes sense. I think what we're just talking about with connection, like a lot of people connect over drinks. And so I could see being a new mom and being like, oh my God, I've been in the house with the baby all day. I just got to get out. Like, do you want to meet for a glass of wine? And like, let's just get a little drunk and like feel better. So I get it. I think it's a little, and I don't say this in a judgmental way at all, but I think it's a little like risky. Like, I think it's a little, it's a slippery slope because what we were talking about earlier with like escaping, like I understand wanting to like numb out a little bit and just turn your brain off because you're so tired at the end of the day. But I also think that you don't want to feel like you're escaping your child.
Yeah.
And so I think like maybe like if it's just you and your mom friends and like you're, that's your time for you, that's great. Like do that. But I think where it gets a little bit like makes me nervous is you're with the baby and you're drinking a bottle of wine alone. Like it just depends, you know.
This is not a judgment thing, but I will not defend because I actually kind of have interesting feelings towards mommy wine culture. But I think that like there are levels of drinking.
Yeah.
Like we said. And I think maybe I'm sure some people have this thought around me when I say I'll take an edible at night. Like there are different highs. Mm-hmm. Some people can have a glass of wine and that's like their switch. I think it's twofold. One, a lot of people, specifically I find moms, look for something to make that switch from I've been a mom all day to now I have this time for myself. Right. And I know that this was huge with drinking in COVID when we were all isolated because it was like, you're not leaving your house.
Right.
You're working from here. You're doing everything here.
Right.
You're with these same people that you live with. So where is that flip switch at like 5 o'clock that day's over for work? Mm-hmm. Now it's time to relax. And for most people, it looked like having a drink.
Right.
And I think that is something that a lot of moms will crave of like, oh my God, finally, I get to be by myself for a few hours maybe.
Yeah.
So I think that there are definitely people who can have one glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you said of why you're grateful you're sober, like I think there are people who one glass may lead to an amount another, that's not safe. I will say the same about THC. Like if I'm taking a 1 to 2 milligram edible for me personally, fully able, like that's really to quiet my ADHD brain, which I don't know if this is great. Quite honestly, I'm sure people would say it's not, and it's not an every night thing.
Right. But when you take that edible, you're still in your house and in your body. You're still able to show up for your kids if they need you. Like you're still there, right? Like I'm talking about like going to the level that I would have gone like if you're drunk.
No, that's
right.
Not, like, that's, you can't care for a child.
Yeah.
So I think that that is a huge defining factor. But I do find it interesting. I'm curious if you feel this way. Like, do you have something for that flip switch? Because for me now it's a shower.
I love a shower. I love like a dark shower.
Yeah, because that's how I like exit the mom day to like I have these 2 to 3 closing shift hours to myself.
Closing shift. One thought before I answer that on mommy wine culture that I also think, I think it bothers me a little bit because it's like, why is that what we're offering moms as a society?
110%.
Like, why are we just like, shh, just have your wine and like, and like, don't think about how you're feeling. Like, no, no, no. Can we just please talk about how it's so hard being a new mom?
Yes.
You're exhausted all the time. You're touched out. You're overstimulated. No one, like, you're, if you're trying to work, if you're working from the home or out of the home, like, you feel like you're, and you talk about this so eloquently all the time. Like, you feel like you're never doing enough. You feel like you're
not. Feel eloquently, but thank you.
No, but you're being honest about it and you're talking about it. And like, a lot of people aren't. Like, can we offer support and community around that versus just like,
absolutely,
mommy has her wine, her happy juice.
I think that's what people are looking for.
That's what it
that's
is.
That's what's the craving.
Yes.
Of it's community. It's feeling seen. It's something to have for yourself.
It's that exhale.
And it's unfortunately being funneled into a glass of wine.
Right.
Pushed on us.
Exactly.
I feel less now, but I do think that was a big thing.
Right. And there are so many other like outlets now for moms, right? And there's like communities that are cropping up and people are talking about it. But there's something about it that irks me when it's pushed on us from like alcohol companies, right?
Yes.
That are like, here's mommy's juice, or like the t-shirts that are like mommy's like happy wine. Like I'm like,
here. I think that my biggest gripe with it is that I will, not by many, but I obviously have some trolls in my DMs, comments, whatever, who will judge me because I openly say that once in a while I'll take a 2 milligram edible. But if I posted myself pouring a glass of wine, those words would never be uttered.
Never.
And that's my gripe.
Totally.
And I really encourage people to like
think about
that. Unpack that.
Well, it's because we've been fed this story about alcohol our whole lives, that it's good for us actually in moderation.
Right.
It's actually not. Like there's so much science now that's like any amount of alcohol. And again, no judgment, because they could say the same thing about red meat or other things that we're consuming. But there's science now that's like any amount of alcohol actually like increases your risk of certain types of cancers, whatever. So it's like, we've been fed this narrative that it's good for you, everything in moderation, it's fine, right? But that's, I think, been pushed on us by like companies that stand to benefit
they're
and
making
profit
money
from us consuming alcohol. And it puts so much pressure also on the mom to yet again, like do it perfectly.
Oh.
Because even my answer of like, I think it's okay if you do it the right way and if you only have one glass.
Like you have to do it
perfect. You have to do it perfect. You have your one glass or like not at all. It's it's really hard.
It's really hard.
And I really deeply understand the desire to have something that's just for you and to separate from the day to night. Right. So what do I do?
So what do you do?
I love a shower. You and I do the exact same thing. And it's so funny because I saw you do a story about it. I put on noise canceling headphones.
Oh, absolutely.
And I blast music. And my husband's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm calling you. You can't hear me. I like clean up. I do whatever. Like, I love that because it's like, he's asleep. I have the Nanit on my phone. Like, I will get an alert if he wakes up.
Also, but my
like,
husband's home.
And my husband's home.
He can hear it.
But, like, I don't have to be like, was that the baby? Like, did I, like, does he need me? Like, I can just be in my own world.
It is an escape.
It's an escape.
And I need that.
Sensory, also, like, overload at the end of the day after being, like, clawed at and touched all day. Like, so I love that you do that too, because I started doing that. And it's like, I don't know, I feel
life changing.
I feel
like
really
the noise canceling headphones makes a massive difference.
It really does. Like, it's not like an AirPod situation.
No,
the big noise canceling headphones. And I will like clean up, I'll shower, I watch a show. Really like the shower and skincare and like cozy pajamas and getting in bed. I feel like myself. Like I feel like a person. And then I'm doing something for myself. I'll read, I'll watch a show. And then, like, not every single night, but I do really try to, like, get out of the house with my husband when we can and, like, go for an early dinner. And, like, that feels really good.
Yeah, we've been really bad at that. We haven't gone for one date. We just
gone
went on
like,
a trip.
Three.
Right. So we haven't done that.
But like we need to get better about that. Speaking of partners, one of the questions, and I know you touch on this in the book, how do you handle like your spouse drinking if you're not drinking?
So my spouse drank the whole time that we were dating. Adam drank on all of our dates. He drank at our wedding. He drank on our honeymoon. And he no longer drinks now. He stopped drinking.
Okay.
Yeah. For a bunch of reasons. I think like being married to a sober person, you really look at the way that you're drinking.
Absolutely.
And like, is this serving me? Right. But how did I deal with it when he was still drinking? It never bothered me. Mm-hmm. I felt like I didn't want him to feel like a certain way about it in the very beginning. So I think I like overcorrected and was like, please drink, like drink mm-hmm. on our dates. Like, I don't care. I think to be totally honest, I was really concerned when I was dating with like people liking me still in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so I just was like more concerned with like what he was going to think of me not drinking. And I never really thought about how I felt about my partner drinking.
Okay.
And then as we dated and as we like spent more and more time together, I really like paid attention to how I felt. I didn't love when he would get drunk. I didn't love that. Like, and that didn't happen often, but like if we were at a wedding or like in COVID when mm-hmm. he was drinking alone, I didn't love that. I would be like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm here and you're kind of like in another world, sort of.
Yeah.
But I really never minded it when we would be like on a date or, you know, out to dinner or something and he would have like a drink or two.
Having one partner who's chosen not to drink, like the other partner doesn't need to stop drinking. But I do think that like inherently it impacts their relationship with alcohol, hopefully for the positive.
Yeah.
It's just not as interesting because you're also seeing someone hopefully thrive without it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, what's that feel like?
Yeah. And I think that's what happened for him. Like, and we were also like talking about having a baby and, you know, becoming parents.
Exactly.
And he was like, why would I want to be doing this alone?
We don't want a hungover parent. Neither do they.
Right. Exactly. And like, what kind of dad do I want to be? Do I want to be the dad that like is hungover and is like, buddy, go watch TV? Or do I want to be like waking up and like going out? Right. And so I think that he just sort of had to like ask himself those questions. But it was a surprise. Like, I very much didn't expect that to ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been fine.
Yeah. I think if you're in a place where you're choosing not to drink and your partner's still drinking, but it's bothering you.
Yeah.
I think that that does warrant a conversation soberly for both of you of like, this is what's making me uncomfortable. I don't like it when we get to X point.
Yes.
And, you know, this is the way I feel like what's sparking this for you.
Right.
Having those real
talks. And like, I think we had some of those. I mean, yeah, I remember being like, okay, well, you're dating a sober person. So like, just know that if we're out and you get really drunk, like you're doing that alone, mm-hmm. you know, and I am fully present for all of it. And he was like, right. Yeah. You know, and so I do think that it changed things for him very gradually.
Yeah.
And again, like they had, I very much went into the relationship being like, I am in complete acceptance of this person drinking. Like I am love this person for who he is exactly as he is now. I think like if you are dating someone hoping that they will change.
You can't go into a relationship hoping you're going to mold anyone to do anything.
Yeah. But I think hopefully if you pick someone who is also committed to like being a better version of themselves mm-hmm. in different ways, like it could happen gradually.
I also think in this day and age, as you hit a certain age, especially if you have kids, like most people in my life are actually shifting that way.
Yeah.
Which I actually said to my mom this morning when I was saying that I was interviewing you, because she's at her house. I was like, I feel like in 20, 30 years, drinking is going to be the cigarettes.
I totally agree.
I'm like, what were we doing?
Well, I think about it now when I hear like Gen Z or like just younger kids talking about like the girl boss time and mm-hmm. like the way that we lived. And they're like, why? You know, like we're so different now. Like, and I don't know that drinking has the same like allure and appeal that it did for us when we were kids. I don't know. Maybe I'm like completely wrong.
No, I don't think it does.
But I really think that like growing up with social media, having access to like so many different perspectives, seeing so many people on TikTok that are like, I'm sober curious, I don't drink. Like it's just become so normalized. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, I even now look back at things that we did and I'm like, I would never like do that now. Not
never.
Even just because I'm sober, but because like I know so much more. Like Four Loko, it's disgusting. Like,
oh my God.
We drank
jungle juice in college, like with God knows what some of those frats were putting in there.
Right. Like, yeah. I don't think that that is I don't think that's cool anymore. Like, even people who are still drinking, I think it's like organic wine and like different.
I think people are, I think it is different. I think the narrative is shifting. And I think the younger generation, if they can, if they're drinking, it's more of an awareness. Hopefully, who the, actually,
I don't even know,
because I'm not really hanging out with many Gen Z's at all.
Yeah.
But I feel that way. Who knows? Maybe that's just what TikTok serves me.
TikTok might just be showing, because then I also think of someone like an Alex Earl who's like young and having fun and going out and very much drinking.
Right.
So
that's
like,
true.
I don't know. But I think
that's actually very true. Maybe it's just our algorithm.
It's just my algorithm. My algorithm's like, everyone's sober. Like, you are cool. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on here.
Thank you.
Plug yourself. Where can everyone get more of you?
So my book is called Drinking Games. The paperback is out now. You can get it wherever books are sold. And
you read the Audible, which I love.
Yes. You can listen to my voice longer if you want to with the audiobook. And then I'm on Instagram at Sarah L. Levy. And I also have a newsletter on Substack called Seltzer Rocks, where I write weekly essays about sobriety, motherhood, life, and culture. So you can find me there.
Amazing. Everything will be in the show notes. And thank you so much for coming on here and sharing so openly and vulnerably.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you all so much for listening to today's episode of Freckled Foodie and Friends. I have so much fun recording the show. It is my favorite part of my job and truly is what lights me up. Your feedback and response to every episode is what keeps me going. And if this episode resonated with you, please feel free to DM me over on Instagram or share on your stories. If you are looking for a way to support the show, please rate and or review on whatever platform you use to listen to your podcast. It means the world to me and it really helps the show grow. Please also make sure to hit subscribe so that you are up to date with new episodes coming at you every Wednesday morning. And of course, please be sure to follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Cameron Oaks Rogers. I love you and I appreciate your support so much.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.